The information presented on this recording is provided only as general information. It is not intended to represent that EFT is used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or psychological disorder. EFT is not a substitute for medical or psychological treatment. The presenters of this program accept no responsibility or liability whatsoever for the use or misuse of the information contained on this recording. Welcome. This is Jessica Maya Ortner with EFTReveal.com. Please enjoy this free interview, and we encourage you to spread this information to others. If you enjoyed this interview, please go to tryitoneverything.com and order our movie about EFT. If this is your first time with us, please go to the main page and click on EFT instructions so you can become familiar with EFT. Enjoy! So today's topic is living with cancer. You know, many times our focus is on cancer research and fighting cancer, yet being diagnosed with cancer and living with cancer has such an emotional impact on the individual and their family. So I'm very excited and honored to have Emma Roberts with us. Emma is the co-founder of the EFT Center in London, England, and we'll be talking about her successful clinical results with people living with cancer. So welcome, Emma.
Thank you. Hi.
How's the weather in London?
Wet.
Not surprising. Well, Emma, when someone comes to you, someone with cancer comes to you, what are they looking for?
Initially they're looking for a means of clearing their anxiety, clearing the fears around the actual cancer. But ultimately, you know, they want to move on their healing path usually. They're usually people who are fairly self-aware and who want to take charge of their own process to a point. Mm-hmm. Often, you know, alongside the traditional medical model, and that's the joy of the EFT, so it works alongside anything. It's not a choice. They don't have to do one thing and not the other. But I will always start with kind of where they're at and what their immediate anxieties and fears are. It's a scary journey. People don't want to take it. They don't ask to take it. And quite often people are feeling perfectly healthy before the diagnosis. It can be very shocking.
Right. And when they come to you, what are the common emotions that are associated with cancer, kind of the journey they go through from, you know, diagnosis on?
I mean, it really depends on the person, on where they are in their lives. I mean, obviously fear is the biggest, fear and anxiety about the future, about how they're going to get through this next stage of their lives. Financially as well, often. Mm-hmm. And so quite often there's a lot of guilt about bringing this onto their families, guilt about maybe they haven't stopped smoking and they should have done, guilt about the way they've been living their lives, whatever it is they're saying to themselves. But those are predominantly the really big ones, you know, fear of death, fear of the treatment, anxiety about its effects for themselves and everybody else.
Right.
And guilt.
What's the, using EFT, you know, we know that it works with the emotional side, but how have you seen it work with the physical symptoms that come on with cancer and with chemo?
Yeah, we've seen some amazing results. I mean, Sue Beer, who I work with, and I, we run groups, regular groups. In fact, we've got one tomorrow morning at the Breast Cancer Haven, which is a charity here in London. And we see people at all stages of breast cancer and secondaries from that. And we've discovered through just working with these people over a period of years that they can get extraordinary physical results tapping. Working with things that actually the medical model doesn't bother with, like veins collapsing in chemotherapy and that sort of thing, seem to be able to rebuild the structure of the veins using Pat Carrington's Choices protocol.
Can you kind of walk us through that? And did you work specifically with a client with...
Well, yes. Originally, this was an acupuncturist client of mine who was going down the medical model for breast cancer with chemotherapy and then radiotherapy, but was very, very keen to support her journey with Chinese herbs. And her veins started to collapse with all the chemotherapy, all the needles going into them. And what they like to do then is to put what they call a port in, which is a line straight into your body, usually into your chest, to allow the chemicals, to allow the chemotherapy to go through without actually going in through a vein. And the one thing that they don't allow you to do, or one of the things they don't allow you to do with a port, is to take Chinese herbs, which through threw my client into, you know, into a really difficult place, because she was actually placing her real faith in the Chinese herbs rather than the chemotherapy. But she was the mother of two young daughters, and she needed to do the chemo from everybody's perspective. So anyway, she came in and she said, "Well, you know, look at my veins," and her veins were pretty short, I have to say.
Right.
And I said, "Okay, well, how do you think, you know, what do you think, what are you seeing there?" And she said, "Well, I think they're just weak and feeble." And I said, "Okay, well, so how do you want them to be?" And she said that she wanted them to be strong and robust.
Mm-hmm.
So a combination of a tapping protocol on, even though my veins are weak and feeble, I choose them to be strong and robust, plus a very clear visualization. Visualization was very important. And she tapped, I mean, she was religious, she set her phone alarm so that every hour she would do a round of tapping, at least one on this. And when she went back for the next chemotherapy, the first thing the nurse said to her was, "Wow, your veins are strong and robust."
She used those words?
Yeah, she used those words, which are, you know, they're not usual words for describing veins.
Right.
And anyway, so soon I started trying this out in our groups, and we've had so much evidence of the same thing happening. Not necessarily using identical words, but, you know, people's veins actually recovering. So we started thinking, well, you know, if that's going on the outside, what could possibly be going on the inside? I mean, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll sometimes get people to tap on reducing tumours, and also to tap on receiving the chemotherapy or the radiotherapy, allowing the body to receive the treatment. Because it's not a pleasant treatment, and people quite rightly don't like the idea of it, and they go in fighting, if you like. They're doing it, but they don't want to do it. And we found that if you can clear the fight and allow the body to actually accept the treatment as a healing source,
mm-hmm.
the side effects seem to be much, much less.
Right. You know, yesterday I was speaking to someone who went through chemo and is recovering, and he was telling me that the one feeling is you feel so powerless, because he felt he couldn't fight it himself, and he had to go to his doctors, and he had to sit there and say, "Do what you want with me." And he was like, "Now the chemo's over, but I'm so, you know, angry because I'm still having all these symptoms."
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the blessing of EFT. It actually gives people something positive that they can work with themselves. It doesn't mean they're bound to come and see a therapist all the time. They can actually do their work themselves and get results on their emotional healing, get changes in how they feel physically, and I think that's probably the most important thing of all, that and the fact that it goes alongside any form of conventional medicine as well, so mm-hmm. There's no battle.
Right. But see, we almost are taught that it's a battle, that it's a fight against cancer.
Absolutely. Language is extraordinary, actually. Really extraordinary.
Can you talk a little bit about the language and about even the word cancer?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, if you say the word cancer, how do you feel?
It's terrifying. I mean, it's a terrifying word.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people feel that who have no connection to cancer at all. So when you're diagnosed, I mean, a lot of that comes from society, and, you know, and it's reasonable. It is a frightening disease.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things I will do with somebody is to tap actually on that word, on the word cancer, and clear the energetic response that their body's having to that. So kind of clear the energy of cancer from their thought field. And, you know, taking it from there, the next step I would usually do is go to the diagnosis, because the diagnosis itself, even if expected, is extremely shocking.
Mm.
I mean, it's frightening and it's shocking. Quite often it's delivered in a rush. You know, people don't have the time to, and the doctors over here at least don't have the time to sit down with people and really explain what's going on. And there is an urgency, you know, they need to get them into treatment there and then. But the shock of that, the diagnosis, stays with them, stays stuck in their body. So we will use either tearless trauma or the movie technique, two EFT techniques, to clear the emotional intensity around the diagnosis. And that can be anything. That can be the look in the doctor's eyes. It could be the words he says. It could be the voice that he or she, the voice tone. And it's not that the doctors mean to, you know, create this trauma. It's almost inevitable. They can't help it by the very fact of the diagnosis. But they just don't have enough time to spend sort of picking up the pieces afterwards. They can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the EFT is so useful again.
I mean, do you find that people who have cancer, are there other resources out there to help on the emotional side of it?
Not really. I mean, we have, I don't know, again, about the States, but in England, certainly, we have a charity called the Macmillan Cancer Charity, which has Macmillan nurses who come in, and they do, they support, they're great, they work on the practical side, how to sort out your finances, how you're going to get to hospital, all those sorts of things. But the emotional bit seems very much kind of pushed to one side. Not just for the sufferer, actually, but also for the families, because they get, you know, they get affected hugely as well, and any children, those sorts of things. You know, there just isn't the resource, there aren't the resources out there for them. And that's, again, you know, where EFT is so amazing, I think.
So if you're a mother who's been diagnosed with cancer and you have this, you know, obviously you think about your children, can you tap with them? Can it be a thing you do together on maybe the common fears a family has?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's very, very powerful. I'll often see the children and teach the children how to tap and make it into a game, you know, and then they're helping mum or they're helping dad, and this is, you know, this is how they become involved. And by doing that, it becomes a little bit less scary for the child as well. They feel that they've got something that they can do. Because it's very disempowering to see your parent ill. Parents aren't meant to get ill.
Right. They're supposed to be superheroes.
Yeah, exactly.
When someone goes through cancer, and I've heard that even after the cancer, a big fear is that you never know if it's going to come back.
Yeah,
and
that's very true. And they tell you that you're in remission, again, which is a kind of, by implication, that you're on borrowed time and it's going to come back. It's not always the case. And my belief here, and it is only my belief, is that if you support yourself in whatever way you really truly believe leads to healing, then the chances are you will remain clear, you will remain healthy. But it has to be, I think, the most important thing is the power of belief here. If whatever treatment you're doing, you believe in, you have faith in, then I think, you know, that's the most important thing. And EFT can help you clear the doubts around a particular treatment. You know, it's really a tool to help clear the way for whatever route you've decided to take.
Mm-hmm. And do people who usually come to you, are they doing chemo, or do you find that people try to do it naturally themselves?
It's a complete mixture, total mixture. And again, I come back to, you know, if what they're doing they believe is the best thing, then that's all that matters to me.
Right. And the people that you've worked with that have gone through cancer and now are cancer-free, when they look back on the whole journey, I mean, what are their thoughts about the whole process?
I would say 99% of them are hugely, actually it's going to sound very strange, but they're hugely grateful to the cancer. It is transformational. I mean, it's a horrible way of having to change your life, but the physical disease or dis-ease, if you like, seems to be in many instances a reflection of the emotional life of that particular person. And by working through that alongside the therapeutic or the medical model, they accept the cancer as a gift. Actually, Carol Look once said to me, you know, it's like it's a gift in really bad wrapping paper.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of sums it up. It's, you know, if you're able to turn it around to accepting it and understanding its message, which is not an easy thing to do initially, and that takes time. You could never, ever put that on someone. But that's a realization that people seem to reach, that actually this has been a gift. And people's lives change hugely for the good.
Wow.
You know, not obviously in every case, but the vast majority.
I've heard you in an interview before with Carol Look, and you talked about the difference between, you know, fighting the cancer and fighting with cancer. And can you kind of tell us, when you have cancer, just the way to start viewing it differently than maybe what we've been taught?
Okay. Well, I think most people, when they have that, well, I would say probably almost everybody, when they get that diagnosis, the cancer becomes the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's out of control in their body, that's attacking them from within. And as you said earlier, you know, it medical, well, we all talk about fighting cancer, battling with it, you know, knocking it out or whatever. It's a very gradual process to turn around to work with it, because initially that's not a concept that you could ever again put to a client. It's not an acceptable concept to work with this. This is, you know, this is something that's going to be potentially healing and helpful, and we need to work with it as a friend. But I often think of it as being kind of like a teenager that's on the sort of route that to everybody else seems completely destructive, but actually it's got a purpose, and the purpose is positive in some form of expression. It's just kind of not getting the message across in the right way. Often people like that actually as a metaphor, but
yeah,
that's where I might start to kind of gently approach the possibility of the cancer actually having a positive intention as well. And it's kind of like a, you know, sit up and take notice. You know, you can't, well, I won't say you can't not listen to it. Some people do go into complete denial and never listen to it. But the majority of people, if you have a cancer diagnosis, you listen. And how I kind of get people to be able to kind of work with the cancer rather than against it is often through visualization. How do they see it? And changing what we call the submodalities, the sort of the construct of the vision. So maybe the color, maybe the shape, you know, what needs to happen in order for that to sort of take on a different sense. Sometimes people like to give it a name. But actually acknowledging it rather than being something that's unmentionable, that they don't want to talk about, don't want to think about, you know, painful though it may be, it's there. And that needs to be addressed and worked with rather than fought against. And people actually, when we started our groups, we used to get very worried at introducing this concept that actually, you know, this is the cancer as a message that something is unhealed that needs healing, but actually people seem to know it anyway.
Yeah.
It's just natural intuition comes through. I don't think, you know, we don't tell people anything, just let them come to their own conclusions, but people offer us this. I mean, all my work with cancer is from learning from clients. You know, I haven't had cancer, so I can't possibly claim to have first-hand experience, but I have seen it very, very, very close up and worked with it and, you know, seen the results.
And how does the, you know, the average person who comes and wants to learn EFT for cancer, do you find them doing their homework and tapping often?
Yeah, absolutely. They're brilliant. They're such a rewarding bunch to work with. Absolutely, because they really, really want to heal.
Mm.
You know, they really want to heal. And so, yes, they do. I mean, occasionally there may be blocks to that. There may be some resistance. There's usually a good reason behind that, which can, again, be cleared with EFT. But yes, I mean, on the whole, they're great tappers. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And do they come to the point where they, I mean, I know this is a very sensitive topic of why that cancer was created.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that someone has to take a responsibility for the cancer and say, well, maybe I created this because I wasn't taking care of myself or because I had something that I needed to heal? I mean, that seems like a big pill to swallow.
Yeah, it is, and I would never, ever put that on a client, ever. And actually, that's not my belief. I don't think they consciously created it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that it's the body's unconscious response to some form of disease. But it's, you know, it's not for me to really to say one way or the other whether that is the case. I think this is the danger of the law of attraction sometimes. It can be too simplistic. I mean, cancer is the result of a lot of different things, you know, environmental, lifestyle, nutrition, and emotional, and genetics, obviously, as well. So it's never just one thing. It's a very complex disease.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think that's a different aspect than taking responsibility. I think it's very important that they take responsibility for their healing, and very empowering when people do. You know, that's rather than putting your faith in the hands of, well, me or the doctors or whoever it is, it doesn't matter who it is, who ultimately we don't have that power. The only person who has the power to heal themselves is the client themselves. We can offer them tools and help them and support, but You know, we can't heal them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not us, it's them.
Right. Can we go on to doing some tapping to give people some examples of how they can do it, and we can just tap and I can follow along with you.
Mm-hmm.
And listeners, you can follow along and borrow benefits, and this is really meant to just get the, you know, ball rolling for you to kind of understand the process a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I suggest we do is work on the word cancer. As you said earlier, it got a response in you.
Mm-hmm.
As you say it now, how do you feel? Where is that response?
It's in my chest.
Uh-huh.
I really
what
think
does
it about
feel
it.
Like?
Like a horrible surprise. Like it's something that just comes on out of nowhere.
Okay.
And
on a scale of 0 to 10, what intensity would you give it right now when 10 is the highest intensity and 0 is you feel nothing?
If I really put myself in the position of someone telling me that I had cancer...
Well, just when you hear the word.
It's like a 7.
A 7, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so onto your karate chop or your sore spot, depending on what you're using.
Even though there's something about that word...
Cancer.
That gets this response from me.
This
response in my chest.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Even though I've got the word cancer.
Even though I have the word cancer.
Showing up in my chest.
Showing up in my chest.
That word.
That word.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Even though I have this word.
Even though I have this word.
And I'm responding in my chest.
And I'm responding in my chest.
And it's a 7.
And it's a 7.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself anyway.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself anyway.
Okay, eyebrow point, cancer.
Cancer.
Sides of your eye, that word.
That word.
Under your eye, cancer.
Cancer.
Under your nose, that word.
That word.
On your chin, and everything it means to me.
And everything it means to me.
Collarbone, cancer.
Cancer.
Under one arm, that feeling in my chest.
That feeling in my chest.
Top of your head, somehow connected to that word.
Somehow connected to that word.
Back to your eyebrow point, cancer.
Cancer.
Side of your eye, and everything it means to me.
And everything it means to me.
Under your eye, the energetic imprint of cancer.
The energetic imprint of cancer.
Under your nose, showing up in my chest.
Showing up in my chest.
On your chin, this 7 feeling in my chest.
This 7 feeling in my chest.
Collarbone, cancer.
Cancer.
On one arm, cancer.
Cancer.
Top of your head, that word.
That word.
Okay, take a deep breath in and out. Alright, say the word again.
Cancer.
And what happens now?
It's less intense, it's probably from a 7 to a 5.
Okay.
And my question for you, Emma, is if someone did find out that they had cancer, before even touching and even tapping on, I was diagnosed with cancer and those mm-hmm. feelings, you say the best thing is just simply do what we're doing now, is just on the word.
Yeah, I mean, if you've just been diagnosed with it, it's going to have a much stronger impact than it's having on you now.
Of course, yeah.
And that's going to be tied up with fear, anxiety, beliefs. So the word itself is your starting point, and tapping with the physiology, the physical response to it, is a useful way, because it means they don't have to actually look into the particular emotions that are showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've taken the edge off that, so you say you're at a 5, I would say when you get down to about a 2 or a 3, you might want to start looking into the emotions. But again, it's about tiptoeing around them. Don't want to go absolutely into them, full-blown emotions, certainly not on your own.
Right.
But just following the physical symptoms to start off with, in your chest, the anxiety, or some people feel that in their throat or in their stomach or whatever it is, until that's kind of pretty low, if not gone, and then begin to look at the emotional response.
Mm-hmm. And then when do you briefly talked about the movie technique. Can you tell us more about that and how someone can go through that themselves?
Okay. Well, what I would recommend, actually, anybody with a cancer diagnosis doing, well, actually anybody doing full stop, is going to Gary Craig's website and putting the personal peace process in the search engine, which will bring up a very clear way of working through the specific memories from the past that still carry a charge today. Because those are the ones that are still showing up in your life today, be that physically or be that emotionally. So that's kind of one place to go with this, mm-hmm. which is a version of the movie technique. The movie technique is a way of dissociating yourself from the memories. So let's imagine that you've had a diagnosis of cancer, and we're looking at the actual moment of diagnosis. Mm-hmm. What we really don't want is for you to get into that. We don't want you to access that trauma again. So what we do is we get you to put it as if it was a movie, to run it as a movie on the wall opposite you. Or if it's very traumatic, just not even to go there, just to guess at how you'd feel and hide it behind some curtains. Mm-hmm. So that's called the tearless trauma, which is a double dissociative technique. But what we want to do is to keep you out of this, okay? So you're observing it rather than experiencing it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then what I would do is I'd ask them to zoom in using, imagine they've got a zoom lens in their mind, to zoom in onto the piece of that memory that has the highest intensity. Gary calls it the highest crescendo, emotional crescendo. And that could be, I mean, that could be a freeze frame, that could be a tone of voice, it could be a look on someone's face. That key piece, probably no longer than 5 minutes, usually an awful lot less, will be what holds the trauma of that particular memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get them to tap around on, I'll get them to give it a title. So let's say we called it the diagnosis. And we just tap around on, even though I have this diagnosis movie, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Until the intensity on saying that has reduced enough that you can actually begin to look at the movie. And you need to be painstakingly careful with this, really creeping up on it very, very slowly. And I would recommend actually people working with somebody on this. It doesn't have to be a therapist, but it needs to be someone who's familiar with the technique, which is also on Gary's website.
Because do you find that once they have the diagnosis, is that something that often plays again over in their mind?
Yes, I mean it does, and not necessarily for the reasons that we'd imagine. I mean, I have one client who was given the diagnosis when she was standing there in her knickers. She had no other clothes on, mm-hmm. and the guy just told her, well, you've got cancer. That was the bit that really got it for her, the fact that she was, you know, standing there feeling really vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Other people, it could be, you know, the tone of voice and that shock, and that reminds you of, I don't know, your headmaster or something. You know, the bottom line is it's going to be shocking and it's going to be traumatic however it's couched, however it's presented. You know, even if it's presented really lovingly and carefully with a lot of time, it's going to be shocking, so we have to clear the trauma from that, absolutely.
And like you said, this is just the first step of, before, you know, working on the symptoms and the feelings is just that beginning. Because, I mean, I guess people don't think that's a big trauma in itself.
That's a massive trauma. And there is evidence to support the fact that cancer cells are sparked by trauma. So, you know, we don't want to have another one there.
Right. Wonderful. Well, Emma, thank you so much.
I mean, that's a pleasure.
It was incredibly informative. And, Emma, where can people find more about you and...
On the EFT Centre's website, which is www.theEFTCentre, spelled the English way, re.com, or on EFTMastersWorldwide.com.
Mm-hmm. And you said that you and Subir, you guys do a lot of work with this.
Yeah, we do. We're off to do a group tomorrow morning, actually.
Oh, that is wonderful. It's such great work that... you're doing, it's really inspiring.
Oh, good. Well, we think so. It inspires us.
Yeah. Again, this is Jessica with EFT Revealed. If you are listening to this interview and you thought of a friend or family member that could really benefit from this information, please pass it along with love. You can also learn more about us at tryitoneverything.com. Like always, we truly hope that you found some new insights on how you can use EFT to be a healthier and a happier you.